That equity requirement is 10%. And one of the major changes was that the SBA has made it a lot easier with how you come up with that 10%.
This is the South Storage Podcast, where we share the knowledge and skills from the industry's leading investors, developers, and operators to help you launch and grow your South Storage business. Your host, Scott Myers, over the past 18 years has acquired, developed, converted, and syndicated nearly 5 million square feet of South Storage nationwide. With the help of his incredible team at SouthStorageInvesting.com, who has helped thousands of people achieve greatness in South Storage.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the South Storage Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Myers, and today's episode, we have Ann Mino with Live Oak Bank. Now, Ann has been not only a friend of the show, but a friend of our organization for many years. We've worked very closely with Live Oak Bank as they are the nation's leading SBA lender in self-storage. And Ann has been to our mastermind. She has been to our self-storage academies, and she has helped countless members in our organization, in our ecosystem, to get their first loan and multiple loans and launch and grow their self-storage empire. And today, what I wanted to do is have Ann on to kind of break down some of the rule changes the SBA made back in November of 2023, but more specifically, focusing on what that means for the self-storage industry and obviously what it is that affects us the most. So with that, Ann, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, good to have you back, Ann. Always good to see your face. So if you would, for the folks who aren't familiar perhaps with Live Oak Bank and or working with yourself, give us a little bit of background and then let's jump into some of these rules.
Perfect. You got it. So Live Oak Bank is the leading SBA lender by dollar volume in the United States. On top of that, my team, which is specifically doing loans for building or buying self-storage, by dollar volume is the leading lender in the U.S. For SBA loans. So pretty important. We have over $1 billion self-storage portfolio. And one of the things we pride ourselves on is our ability to work in niche industries. So there are 5 lenders on my team, underwriters and closers, credit officers. All we do is eat, sleep, and breathe self-storage. So as the economy changes, as it does, our team stays consistent. We tend to be pretty conservative, and our underwriting stays the same. We don't have to change as the market changes its mind about anything whatsoever. So I'm pretty proud of that. Makes us really strong lenders.
Well, we know, and that's why we continue to come back and work with you, Ann, and Live Oak. And so I've been looking forward to this conversation because, as you know, we've had a lot of questions. I guess the first question is, with these rule changes, is, hey, Scott, it appears as if the SBA actually made it easier, and that doesn't seem to be the case with lenders normally, and indeed that is the case, but there are some specific rule changes that occurred back in November that the SBA made, and so I just thought it'd be best to bring you on to have you explain exactly what that looks like and what it means for us in the self-storage industry. As you mentioned, the niche that we operate in that the SBA tends to really like, tell us about some of those changes and how they're affecting us and how we need to approach the market now.
Thank you. Great. Yes, there were a lot of changes made recently, and this is a government entity, so you probably can understand that changes are made very slowly, very thoughtfully. They do have to be voted on, and a lot of these changes were made with the intention of trying to make the access to capital easier, which I truly appreciate because that's the intention of the SBA in general. SBA is a government-controlled program that is not funded by tax dollars. It's actually funded by the fees that they roll into the loans, which is really nice. It means it's not going anywhere, depending on who's in the White House. And it's really important. And it's out there to make access to capital easier for small businesses. So very proud of that. And I'm really happy with some of the rules that they've put in place truly are just trying to make everybody's lives easier, the lenders' lives and the borrowers as well. So one of the first things I wanted to highlight is seller debt as equity. So equity is what you're required to bring into a project. So for an acquisition in self-storage, your minimum down payment, for the most part, this is for a 7A loan. Most of what I talk about is going to be for a 7A loan. That equity requirement is 10%. And one of the major changes was that the SBA has made it a lot easier with how you come up with that 10%. So seller debt is now an acceptable way to come up with your 10% with a few rules around it. It used to be that if your seller debt was going to qualify, it would need to be on full standby for the life of the loan. So what does that mean? It means the note that is due to them, you can't pay it until you're done with your Live Oak debt, which typically for storage is 25 years. So they just took that away. So that's really good. There are rules, though.
So, Anne, I want to ask you a question. Now, you mentioned that's for 7A. And just for the folks that may not be familiar with the SBA and the different types of loan programs, can you explain the difference between that 7A and what that means compared to other loans that are available for us in the self-storage world?
Yes. So the 7A loan caps out at $5 million. A 504 loan can go up to $14 million. 504 loans get underwritten and approved in conjunction with the SBA, meaning your lender goes to the SBA. There's joint underwriting and joint approval. Nothing wrong with that. It does take a little bit longer, and it's out of our hands. The SBA, you know, has to approve it regardless of whether we think the loan is the best deal in the world. Okay. 7A, the lender that you go to, they are underwriting it, approving it in-house, and as long as they are a designated lender and it's their capital. It's a little bit easier to get access to. And Live Oak was able to lend more than $5 million on those. But we'll talk about that in a different podcast. But call your lender. And A, you want to know if they're a preferred lender with the SBA, meaning it's their capital, it's their credit decision. And then your lender will put you in the right program for you.
Perfect. Okay. Thanks for that delineation. Carry on.
Okay. So seller debt. So here's what, in order to qualify your seller debt, it needs to, I'm going to make sure I say this right. The debt must be on full standby for 2 years. So we've gone down from 25 years down to two. That's a lot easier. We can pay that seller in year three. They're probably going to be amenable to those terms. And there can't be a balloon payment in the debt. So it's got to be fully amortizing. You and the seller can decide what that amortization looks like, but there just can't be a balloon payment. In other words, we want to make sure that the business is going to be able to afford to pay it back. When we're underwriting that debt, we're going to take into account the full principal and interest payment. So we do need to make sure the business can pay us back and pay that seller back once it's in a full principal and interest situation. So hopefully that makes sense. And it used to be that seller debt could only count for 5% of your 10% equity injection. It can now count as the full 10%. So things just got a lot more flexible and really better for everybody. It's better for the seller. It's better for the buyer. Let's see. If you are talking to a seller about seller debt, that's great. It doesn't have to be part of your equity injection. You can also use it as part of your capital stack. If it's not counting towards equity, you can have any terms that you want. So that's a really important distinction. If you're listening to this at home, you truly can do whatever you want with a seller note. It's only if it's going to count towards equity that we have these certain rules that are in place. Let's see. Okay, when it comes to a seller earnout, those are prohibited by the SBA. We cannot give principal balance back to, let me pause and restructure that. The seller note principal balance cannot go up in the future. What is eligible is a post-close reduction of principal on the seller note. So this can be used to mitigate transition risk. If any cash goes back to the buyer because the business didn't meet certain metrics, that's fine. First, we want it to pay down the SBA loan. So let's say there's a little bit of cash left. The business didn't do whatever the clauses were in this situation. If there's cash, first we want to pay down the note up to the point at which it would trigger a prepayment penalty. Because in the first 3 years, you've got a prepayment penalty. If there's more cash, that can then go back to the buyer. So does that make sense? It's going to come back to us until it triggers that you can pay down up to 25% of your principal per year with no penalty. So that's how that would work. The rest of it can go back to you. So that is okay. Seller earnout, not okay. It's an important distinction. We don't see a ton of seller notes with this type of feature in it, but it's certainly something that a savvy investor could include in their language.
Mm-hmm. So let me pause there for a second as well, Anne. You know, I think this is important to note for folks that if they're looking to use an SBA loan for their any project or any acquisition, and if they're going to structure it with a seller note, they need to get you involved sooner than later just to make sure that the right language is in place to make sure this happens. Because the last thing that we want to do is to be able to present something to a seller as if it's final, and then it's not going to be. We have to come back with revisions to say, hey, the lender or the SBA has come in and stated that we can't structure it that way. So I guess if there's anything you want to add on to that, but the bottom line is, you know, you're going to be partners in this project with the borrower and you as the lender, so that they should get in touch with you to make sure that all that language is copacetic before they present it to the seller, correct?
Yes, and thank you so much for stating that. You're exactly right. So we don't want to dictate how you write your seller note, but we do want you to make sure you're following SBA rules, and we're governed by this, by the SBA. So that's a great distinction. Please talk to your lender early about how to structure your seller note, what language can be used in there, and what some of the eligible things are. That's great. Yes. So sticking in the equity kind of section of the rule changes, sourcing equity got a lot easier and types of equity got a lot easier. So again, this is your 10% equity injection that the bank's going to ask you to bring into the deal. It used to be that SBA said, we really don't want you to use borrowed funds. Well, they just kind of opened up the rules on that. And it is acceptable now to use a HELOC on your home or to do a cash out refinance of real property. That's now totally fine. We need to make sure that you can personally pay back that debt. So we're not going to hit the business for the debt. We do want to see that your income, completely unrelated to the storage business, can afford to take that debt on. But if it can, that's completely fine. So if you really don't want to touch your savings, you can go out and get a HELOC on any piece of real estate you want or a different business that's now eligible. That's great.
So does that change anything in terms of a global underwriting then? If, you know, as you're looking at a borrower, you know, globally and looking at all their assets and whether this now this new facility is going to be, you know, cash flowing something else that may be, you know, going under. I mean, there's still a global underwriting component to this, I guess, is what I'm getting at, correct?
There is. So any businesses that a borrower owns 51% or more, we're going to look at the cash flow of those deals. So if that business is going to take on a HELOC to help with the storage business, we want to make sure it can still cash flow that debt.
Still cover its own. Yep.
Absolutely. Yep. But there's no other issue. It makes, if you're doing a HELOC on a rental property or a personal residence, it's going to change your debt to income ratio. So we do want to see that your income is twice your debt. So it's going to change that number. But as long as, you know, let's say you don't have a ton of cash, but you've got a lot of equity in your home, you're now able to play in the space.
The other distinction, and I guess it raises another question, you know, in the past, there has been the question of whether you can bring private equity partners in. If this is a syndicated project and private equity is coming into this project, that could be considered borrowed money. In the past, certain loans or certain SBA programs have stated that you couldn't, and others said there could be. And it seems like for years, there was always a little bit of gray area as with regards to how that's counted. So could you settle that for, you know, once and for all?
I don't know if I'll be able to do it once and for all, but I'll tell you my understanding and how the program's gotten a little bit easier. If you have minority investors giving money towards the project, that's totally fine. They need to sign an investor affidavit stating where the funds are coming from, and they need to have 19% or less ownership in the business. Funds get tricky if you are using a fund that has multiple owners, and potentially that ownership's going to change over time. That gets a little trickier. But in general, minority investors, not a problem. We no longer have to source 3 months of bank statements, so that's a huge, meaningful change. For each individual guarantor and for anyone else bringing money to the table, typically it's going to be 1 month bank statement that we want to see, and then assigning an investor affidavit. When it comes to personal injection, they made this a little bit more complicated, but not really. They don't want your personal money to come from a business balance sheet. It's okay for it to come from a business, a HELOC or a line of credit, but we really want to see those funds transferred to a personal account. And SBA is being very specific with, if you own another company, the funds can't go directly from that business balance sheet into our, you know, the escrow account. So in other words, transfer the funds to your own personal account. Be mindful to leave enough money in your operating account for that business to still be considered healthy. If you take all the capital away, and I can see on your tax returns that you need $60,000 a year to operate, that's probably not going to be, you know, a good thing. So, but that's important to note. They do want to see the funds coming from a personal account. Gifted funds just got a lot easier. So yes, you can use a gift. If you have a wealthy aunt that wants to give money towards your project and does not care about having equity ownership, all they need to do is sign a notarized gift letter. So that just got a lot easier too. So that's really good. Prepaid expenses still count towards a project. That's usually, we don't see that on acquisitions, but for ground up construction, we see that a lot. Those still count. We do need to be able to track it. So we need a paper trail. Land that you own still counts. So that those things haven't changed. But the minority investors just got a lot easier. Gifted funds got easier. And then being able to use a HELOC or a cash out refinance of another business or piece of real estate. All eligible towards your equity injection. So again, trying to make it less cumbersome, which we love. So the next thing I'm going to touch on is, I want to mention it. It's not a positive change, but it is a very meaningful change. And it is something that we don't understand and that we're hoping is going to get, we're hoping the SBA is going to take this one back. They changed the rules around partner buyouts or partial changes of ownership. So partial change of ownership is, I own a business with three friends and I want to buy either one or all of their shares. Those are now the loan term for that. If I'm borrowing the money, cannot exceed 10 years. So a typical real estate loan that we see in self-storage, they always have real estate, 25-year term. If I own it 50%, I want to buy my partner out. That new loan's on a 10-year term. That is really going to hurt business cash flow. So not loving that change. We don't understand why that has come about. It makes sense if there's no real estate involved, but there is. And so we're hoping that one's going to be walked back. We just have to, it's a wait and see. But important to note, I get calls all the time about people wanting to buy out their partners. And it just got challenging. So you got to have really strong cash flow to make a 10-year term work.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's also a piece to this, which I think is probably the most important, is the personal resources. One of the prickly points where some folks have gone through the process. They said, boy, that was a little uncomfortable going through as the SBA was looking into all the resources of what had to be collateralized and pledged. So tell us a little bit more about how that has changed for the better.
Yes.
Or what we see as the better.
It used to be the SBA says, hey, this program is set aside for people that really need the money, can't walk into a traditional bank and get a loan with 30 to 40% down. So how do they instruct us to determine whether that's happening or not? It used to be that we had to look at people's personal cash, and they were, one of the metrics was if they have too much cash, they can't get an SBA loan. So that was limiting a lot of people. And there are multiple reasons people may have a lot of cash. They may have inherited it. They may have just sold a business. Their goals are still to buy another small business or whatever their personal goals are. But anyway, the SBA has just said, we're no longer going to look at people's liquid assets and not let them be eligible for an SBA loan. So I'll tell you how this is a great example of this just came up today. So we have somebody that just sold a business and has multiple millions in cash. Obviously, they're going to reinvest it. They want to reinvest it in many different things, not just one thing, right? We all want to do that. We want to diversify our assets. Prior to November, we wouldn't have been able to do a loan for them because they just would have had too many millions in the bank. Now we can. So we can do as many self-storage loans for them that the SBA and our own commissional policy are going to allow for. So that's really meaningful. We have other metrics that we do have to follow for business size standard, but no more personal resources test. You can't be too liquid for SBA. So everybody should
Perfect.
Be cheering
well,
for that
Well, that's a good
one.
Thing. Yes.
Yes. That's a really good one. So the other thing they've done, and this is a little bit more gray, and I think for all of this, you have to keep in mind, you want to call your SBA lender and have a deeper conversation with them about your situation. But in general, SBA tried to make debt refinance simplified easier. It used to be that it was just kind of complicated. We used to have to go to another person's bank, kind of not get permission, but get a letter that that bank was not willing to refinance them. And SBA has now said we no longer have to do that. So if a borrower comes to me, is unhappy with their other bank or unhappy with their other rate on their 7A loan, I can now refinance that without a lot of gray area or red tape.
That's good, because it seems like, Anne, anytime that we have contacted you or anybody within our community has and talk about a refinance, the answer has really been, well, we really don't do that. And so that's good to see that now that there is a vehicle and an on-ramp to be able to at least have that conversation.
Yes. So here's what SBA cares about that has always been in place, but is now still the rule. We have to be able to reduce your monthly payment by 10%. So in other words, we don't want to put you in a worse position. So if you have a longer term loan and for whatever reason, we have to shorten the term, that's not going to be successful. But in general, we can refinance our own debt and another lender's 7A debt a lot more easily, as long as we can improve your position. And I like that rule. I think it's great that a lender can't go refinance one of my customers and put them in a worse position. That's not being a friend to your borrower. So I happen to like that rule.
That's good. That's good protection. Good.
Yes. Something to note, all the debt, if we are refinancing debt, it does have to have been current for the last 12 months of the loan. I did have somebody that, this is in the last 6 months, he had stopped paying on the loan. And he had to get current, which slowed us down in closing before I could refinance it. So it wasn't a problem. I was able to refinance, but keep making your loan payments because we have to be able to show that the debt's been current for 12 months.
That's just always good advice, no matter what.
Yes. So that's kind of the quick and dirty on debt refinance. And then one of the other really meaningful changes that Scott, I know you and I have talked about this many times in when I'm live with you and your audiences, and people get really excited about this one. So SBA is now considering acquisition projects as an expansion versus a change of ownership. If ownership in both businesses stays the same, they share the same 6-digit NICS code, and I'll go into what that is in a moment. And they operate in the same geographical area. Why do I want to be considered an expansion versus a net new change of ownership when I'm doing an acquisition? Because I can do it with no money down. So if you own storage and you want to buy the person down the street, any SBA lender can now do that with no money down, as long as you check these three boxes. Ownership of the entity has to stay the same, meaning your own entity can't change, even 2%. No, cannot do it. The NICS code is on your tax return on the top right-hand side. And it is just a 6-digit code that tells the IRS and the SBA what your industry is, and that has to be the same. So if for some reason your CPA has your business listed as a warehouse instead of self-storage, or it's like lessors of mini warehouses is what our NICS code is in self-storage. If yours is something different, that might be trickier for you to then go acquire. The two tax returns have to match. And then they have to be same geographical area. That's open to interpretation, as you can imagine. It needs to make sense. It needs to be logical. So it's okay for it to be across state lines. Are they within a couple hours of each other where it makes sense that you're going to create some brand recognition and you're going to share resources? You're sharing your marketing person. Maybe you're sharing your maintenance person and your, you know, those sorts of things look the same for both businesses, and it's an expansion. No money down.
So where is that decision made? And I guess pointing back to my statement earlier is that you need to get your SBA lender involved earlier on rather than later. But where is that made? Is that in underwriting or once it goes to loan committee? Because the timing of this is pretty critical if you're looking to either not have any money down or having money down. If you're going to go buy an annex site or buy your competitor, you know, are they 5 miles down the road? Are they 10? You know, what, you know, who makes that decision and how do we approach that?
So it's a great question. For Live Oak, the recommendation is made by the lender. So we will have good justification before the deal ever gets to an underwriter of why we believe this is an expansion. And if we have any doubts about a deal when it comes to this or anything else, we will try as much as we can to pre-flight it with the credit officer just to say, this is how I'm seeing this deal. Do you agree with me? Is there anything you want me to dig into deeper? So we'll do that on the front end. We really try hard to get to a yes or a no really fast front end. So you definitely want to talk to your lender about it early. If they're not sure, you know, it's that may cause you to pause. If that's the only deal way the deal works for you, you can always talk to a different lender or ask them to dig in deeper. Because you need to know that pretty early on.
Oh, of course. Of course. Well, and this is a pretty profound one. I mean, of everything that we mentioned, once again, Ann, thanks for clarifying all of these, and they all are, you're right, positive. But this one is, you know, this could be a game changer for many folks. I mean, if your strategy already is to go into these secondary, tertiary markets and then being able to buy up the competitors in that market, it's much easier to do so in those markets and smaller facilities. And now if you have the ability, which the SBA tends to, I don't know, it seems to work better in some of those environments versus, you know, the REITs trading off properties from one to another or larger projects, and also the size, you know, the lending limits of $5 million. But if you're going into these smaller markets and you're trying to buy up competition, this could change the business plan of many folks out there for the better.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought up the REITs, because one of the changes that was made as well is that, well, let me back up for a minute. When we started lending in self-storage, maybe 10 years ago, the SBA said REITs are in play. That's fine. You can have any one of the REITs manage your property, no problems. We did a lot of loans for those REITs. We believe in them. We think they do a great job. Then the SBA said, wait a second. If they're putting their name on the outside of the building and they own the employees, we feel like that's no longer a personally owned business. That is a passive real estate investment. Okay. So then they said, no more REITs. There are plenty of other third-party managers you could use, but it couldn't be those big guys. They just walked that back. So they could change their minds again. But right now we are able to lend to any one of the REITs. So we've been able to do loans for customers that historically we were having to say no to.
Okay. And so when you say lend to the REITs, that also includes then the individuals who are having the REITs third party manage their facilities, correct?
Correct. Yes. Mm-hmm. Not the REITs themselves, but we're lending to an individual that just says, I want this REIT to be my third party manager.
Yep. Yeah. Because that was a stumbling block for many folks, many of our folks. They just found that the best property management company was was a REIT, or that the REITs dominated in that market in terms from a marketing standpoint and being able to effectively, you know, serve that particular facility because they had a good footprint in that market. And if not, it would be a little more, you know, inferior run perhaps, or, you know, put the property in jeopardy, other than making the best decision to manage that, putting the REITs in, which was the best decision in terms of managing that facility. So that's good to see, because it was almost counterproductive. If you want this thing to do well, you know, you put the best performing management company in it. Sometimes it is the REITs in that market.
Absolutely. And when, from the bank's perspective, if you've got a REIT kind of blessing your project, that's a really good thing.
It sure is. Yeah. Yeah. Their underwriting is pretty strong typically.
Yes. So we're happy with that change. It's all subject to change, you know, again. But for today, this is the world we're living in.
As the saying goes, the golden rule is those who have the gold make the rules. And so and we are thankful for that. But these are all very positive. And again, the reason why we wanted to have you on to explain these. And so anything else now? I mean, this has been out not very long in November, but you've seen a number of loans come across your desk. Anything that maybe turned out a little bit better than you had thought in terms of any examples, or maybe some other pitfalls on the other side of that with these rule changes that maybe, you know, played out a little bit differently once you got an actual loan going to committee?
I think the rule changes have made everything easier. I can't think of a situation the only situation we've had that was bad, potentially negative, was I had somebody come to me that wanted to buy out their partner. And I wasn't able to help them with an SBA loan just because of that 10-year rule change. Everything else, for the most part, you know, we're very conservative in our underwriting. We're still looking for strong projects and strong guarantors. This just kind of took off some what I would call governors that maybe didn't make the most sense in the first place.
Well, as you stated, I would hope to see, and not because I'm in this situation, but I would hope to see that the SBA would take a look at that partner rule in the 10-year, because let's face it, the time that we're heading into right now, it has been challenging, and some there are some troubled and challenged partnerships and projects because of partnerships. So I would expect that they will probably be seeing more of that, where, you know, these partners or one individual is just fine, but the other person, you know, maybe they're in other asset classes or they just need to, you know, something else is going on in their life as a result of the economy and they need to sell out of this partnership. And if they're currently in a loan, that may make it a little more challenging. So I don't know, maybe if enough people run into that and bring it to their attention, that might change.
I think it's very possible that it could. The SBA does do a great job of going to their strong lenders, which I'm grateful to say we're in that pool, and asking questions. Is this making sense for you? You know, they really do. They listen and they're trying to be nimble and meet the needs of everybody. And again, that particular rule, we're not exactly sure what the genesis of it was, what the intention is around it. So there's always a chance that it could change, which would be great. And we will keep you posted.
Well, we appreciate that and appreciate you and taking time out of your busy schedule. We know that it's always good when we get Ann Minos time because things are busy over at Live Oak. So, Ann, how is that? So, Ann, what is the best way for people to be able to get in touch with you?
Thank you so much for asking. So I'm going to give out my email address in just a moment. And when you email me, my response is going to be to give you a link to my calendar and you can schedule a call at a time that's convenient for you. So my email is Ann, A-N-N-E. Mino at Live Oak, just like the tree, .bank.
Perfect. Well, Ann, once again, thanks so much for spending time with us today. Folks, reach out. The reason why we have Live Oak and only Live Oak at our events and on our podcast in terms of our lenders is because they do such an incredible job for us and for everybody in our community. Not only because they are the nation's largest, but that's how they got to be that way, is because they care and they take a good care of our folks as well. So do not hesitate to reach out and frequent Live Oak for your next acquisition. So, Ann, any other parting words as we wrap up for today, or maybe as you're approaching 2024 as a lender, how are you looking at this market and what are your thoughts on it?
We are excited going into 2024. Our phone is ringing off the hook. We are thrilled. Probably the most important thing for people to know is that we're not changing anything about our underwriting standards. We are gung-ho self-storage. We understand it. Once you start talking to me about the nuances of the industry, you're going to learn very quickly that myself and all my lending partners here and the underwriters and closers, we speak the language. We know the industry. We trust it. We believe in it, and as does Live Oak.
Thanks so much, Ann, and I will never pass up an opportunity to touch on our philosophy about underwriting, which is the exact same as you mentioned, is that our underwriting doesn't change. The only thing that's changing in this market is our cost of capital, but our buffers and our baselines and our guardrails and everything is all in place just the same as it was before. The only thing that changes is just our inputs. And so I appreciate you mentioning that as well as we continue to remind our folks that doesn't change, because we get that question so often. So thanks for reminding us of that as well.
Thank you, and thank you so much for having me.
All right. Thanks again, Ann. And thanks so much for joining us once again. And we'll look forward to seeing the rest of you on another episode of the Self-Storage Podcast. Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Hey, gang. Wait, three things before you leave. First, don't forget to follow the Self-Storage Podcast and turn on your notifications so you never miss another episode. And while you're there, please leave us a 5-star review if you like the show. Second, be sure to share your favorite episodes and more via Instagram. And don't forget to tag us. And lastly, head to the links in the show description and hit follow on Twitter and Facebook to get a front row seat as we grow and scale our business and bring you along with us.